Hey, it's David Cherry, and welcome to the show. This podcast helps you stay in tune with the new energy around community and brand building, sharing conversations with some of my friends and my favorite online founders and creators about how they built a brand and community around what they do. And as always, if you want to reach out, just look me up in the show notes, check out the guest links. Thanks for tuning in. All right. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode. Today, I'm very excited to have Adam Jackson on the podcast from Brain Trust. And I'm really fascinated by this business that he's building because it's an entirely new model for how freelancer marketplaces work. So I'm excited to dive into the future of work and discuss some of that. So Adam, thanks so much for being here and welcome to the show.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So I'd love to start with a little bit of your background and just really, I'm curious kind of how you saw the problem that you're solving here with Brain Trust. So yeah, I'm curious about your background and then how or why you were able to sort of uniquely see, this new model that you're creating.
Yeah, for sure. So quick background on myself. I'm a software engineer by training. I studied computer science at Vanderbilt University in Tennessee. Moved out here to San Francisco right out of school. So that was about 16 years ago or so now. My story is sort of a software engineer turned entrepreneur. I actually started out life as a freelance developer. I was a PHP and Perl developer building websites and shopping carts. I was actually a contributor to the PHP project way back in the day. Been very familiar with the challenges of being a freelancer my whole life. And then I started, building software products and platforms and went more of the venture-backed route. Brain Trust is actually my fourth venture-backed project. The first one was an e-commerce local shopping engine that was acquired by Intuit back in 2006. My second company was a automotive marketplace that connected car owners with mechanics via a web-based lead gen system. And that was acquired by Advance Auto Parts in 2011. Then in 2012, I started my third company called Doctor On Demand, which is a large national video telemedicine platform that connects doctors and patients for real-time video medical visits. And I was CEO there for 4 years, and we grew it into a giant sort of enterprise healthcare company. And about 4 years in, it was time to put in what I'd like to call a real manager. So my friend Hill Ferguson took over, and he's to this day our CEO there. And hopefully that company will go public pretty soon. But when I unwound day-to-day at Doctor On Demand, I sort of went back to my first love, which is deep tech. And so I got really into blockchain technology, digital assets, things like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and many others. And I helped start a digital asset management firm along the way called Cambrian. And through my research at Cambrian, I started writing a thesis around what we're now calling the user-owned economy. So the big idea was marketplaces, two-sided web-enabled marketplaces are very expensive to get off the ground, right? To build liquidity. Typically the path is, you start with an idea and then you raise hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars in venture capital to subsidize one or both sides of that marketplace. And great examples of this are Uber and Postmates and, places like Yelp and things like that. And if you're lucky enough to raise all that money and break, the Earth's gravitational pull and actually get liquidity on your marketplace, the issue then becomes you are an investor-owned network. And those investors, very rightfully so, deserve a return on all that capital. Well, where's that return going to come from? It's going to come from raising marketplace transaction fees. And what that does is it ends up creating these divergent incentives between the folks on the network who make their living there, think like an Uber driver or a DoorDash delivery person, or even a restaurant on Yelp, and the owner operator of that network who is trying to get as much of the transaction flowing through their system as possible in the form of a fee. And so you create this, divergent incentives, and there's a huge, incentive to disintermediate the operator, and it starts actually eroding network effects. And so my idea was, I've been building and investing in two-sided marketplaces my whole life. Like I'm a, you know, acutely aware of these divergent incentives. And it was always the big problem with building these marketplaces. So I started trying to figure out how could you alleviate this incentive problem by making your users who make their living on the network also owner operators. So put them in charge, right? And make them, you know, have more skin in the game. And so, you know, this became a almost like a new technology enabling a new business model, right? So you know, imagine if Uber had given away shares of stock to all of its drivers, and then those drivers could invite more drivers and earn more ownership and on and on. You know, fast forward 10 years and their $80 billion IPO, you know, wouldn't have just been five guys in San Francisco becoming billionaires. It could have helped the entire network. So to be fair, I mean, 10 years ago, you just couldn't give, you know, tens of millions of people shares of a company across, especially across, you know, 20 or 30 countries. It's just impossible. You can't do that with shares of a Delaware C Corp, but you can do it with a cryptographic token. So a token secured by a blockchain can be transmitted and possessed just as easily sending an email. And so this became a token economic model that redefines control of a network. And we're sort of looking for a category to start it in. And so this is where Braintrust came from. We incubated Braintrust out of my firm Cambrian. And Braintrust is a global talent marketplace that connects freelance developers, designers, product managers, project managers with, you know, largely like Fortune 1000 US companies that really need that type of talent and just can't hire enough of them in-house. And so that's sort of an arbitrary category to start in. It's actually, you know, it's a narrow category, but it's a very deep one, as your audience probably knows. You know, there's basically unlimited demand for this type of skill set from these big companies that just can't hire them. So that's the category we chose to start in. And we are owned and controlled by our users via our token. So let me pause there, David. I know that was...
Yeah, no, I think that was a great breakdown. It really highlighted the problems of the sort of previous world of marketplaces and what's possible now. And I think that misaligned incentive, like you were saying, between sort of the venture backing and the talent, and being able to shift or change that equilibrium a little bit to give more power to the network makes a ton of sense. I guess just to ask one more question, kind of following up on that, there's still likely going to be some type of venture backing for some of these companies, right? So I understand that the liquidity event or I guess the growth of the network will also be distributed to the owner operators, which are the freelancers. So it's kind of giving the whole long tail of people involved in this business, the upside. How does this work still with getting some type of venture funding? Like how do they still get their return? And how does that not, create those disincentives again?
Yeah, great question. So just because we are moving toward a user-owned economy, you know, instead of an investor-owned economy, doesn't mean there's not a place for investors. There certainly still are. The difference is we'll raise, you know, one to two orders of magnitude less money than we would if we were a traditional profit-seeking, you know, rent-seeking company. So we've raised over two rounds, roughly $25 million, $26 million from some fantastic investors. It's been a blend of kind of traditional marketplace in venture capitalists. And in addition to that, sort of digital asset blockchain focused investors. So the last round was co-led by Acme Ventures and Blockchain Capital with participants like Pantera and Multicoin. And we like the founder CEO of TaskRabbit, Stacey Brown Philpeau, who's a great marketplace builder, Robert Leshner from Compound, Scott Belsky, CTO of Adobe, some really sort of luminary thinkers in the space came together to build that round. But that's the only money we'll ever raise. The next stop for us is to publicly launch the network and let the community take over.
Yeah, okay, that makes a ton of sense. So really it's more just that initial push, and now there's not this like cadence of fundraising that happens because
ideally sort of as the network's growing, that's now being distributed through sort of these owner operators, as you call them. So I think that description, you know, made a ton of sense of what the problems are, what this new model can bring. I'm curious, as you started talking to freelancers, how quickly, you know, did people understand that? And I'm kind of curious, the pitch that you shared, is that the same as what you sort of just, you know, discussed with freelancers who you want to join the platform or the companies you work with? Because I'm kind of curious about whether people get that right away. I'd also love to jump into what some of those ownership kind of features are. Why does it feel different for the freelancer being a part of this network?
Yeah, great point. So the description I gave is sort of just a generic set up the problem, set up the solution, you know, for a, you know, maybe a business-minded audience. When we speak to clients and talent, the value props are fairly different, but obviously very, very interrelated. So I'll start with talent value props. So because we are a user-owned network, we don't have any incentive to charge big fees. Actually, the opposite is true. Our incentive is to charge as low of a platform fee as possible because we'd be charging ourselves the fee, right? And so Braintrust is actually operating the network itself. Once we publicly launch, we'll operate at break even. It's actually a nonprofit. You think of it like a global co-op that simply the point of the network is to bring aggregate very high quality talent in a curated way and match them with really big, interesting ongoing projects, right? So you can almost think of it like the opposite of Upwork or 99 Designs or Fiverr, right? Those are places you go for websites or logos, very small jobs, but average job size is like $500 on those sites. That's not interesting for freelancers, right? You can't make a living doing that. Our freelancers are interested in several things. One, large, interesting, ongoing projects. So we have clients like Porsche, Nestle, Deloitte, Black and Decker. I mean, there's just dozens of them coming on board. Nike just came on board. And those companies are looking for very large projects. So SaaS platforms, mobile apps, data warehouses. We built an insurance comparison shopping engine for Blue Cross. These are big, meaty, interesting, and usually ongoing projects. That's what a freelancer wants, right? Because he or she doesn't necessarily love, you know, going out and having to pitch all the time. You know, they just want to do the work. So there's Valprop one. We're bringing big, juicy clients onto the platform with big, interesting jobs. Number two, our fee structure, because of our ownership structure, our fee structure is very unique. We charge a 0% fee to the talent and a flat 10% fee to the client. Again, kind of just meant to break even. This is great for talent, right? So they come in and they're like, wow, I'm not paying a platform fee. Or if I worked for an agency who marks me up 2 to 3x, we just killed that markup. Amazing, right? I get to earn, you know, my entire full market rate with no platform fees, right? That in and of itself is a game changer. And then the third value prop is where the token comes in. This is where the kind of user owned and controlled aspect comes in. All of our users, our talent members, have the opportunity to earn tokens. I can talk later about how you get the tokens. It's primarily you invite other talent, you help vet that talent, or you help bring on clients, or you do things that we would normally hire people to do. You just do those in a community fashion, right? So it's marketing and copywriting and designing or coding, like anything we would normally hire for, we have community people doing. And in return, they can earn tokens for that. And then what are those tokens good for? Well, we've built several important use cases on the platform for these tokens. The first one is voting. So it's one token, one vote in our system. And this allows our users who have done the hard work to help build our platform and earn tokens for it to control the platform as well. And so one, you know, skeptical person might stop here and ask like, yeah, like who cares about voting, right? Like, you know, nobody votes their Facebook shares. Well, and it sure wouldn't matter if they did, right? Because only one guy's vote matters at Facebook. And so with our platform, it's very different. All the business rules, like what our fees should be or which categories we should operate in or how stringent should our talent screening guidelines be or, you know, what's our product roadmap, you name it. All those things can be proposed and voted on by our token holders. And so what this does is it ensures that our stakeholders, people who make a living on our platform, have a voice in the future of the platform. And that matters a lot. Like, look, when you make your living on a network, you care a lot about what those fees are. I mean, just there's so many examples of gig economy companies, you know, abusing their users through, you know, extractionary practices. I mean, just the most recent example last year, if you remember, you know, DoorDash rolled out this feature where you could tip your Dasher. And they decided in 2019 to keep all of those tips and just book them as revenue to the operating company, basically stealing all that money from the Dashers. So if DoorDash had been built the way Braintrust is being built, that sort of kleptocracy would be impossible, right? It would be, you know, our systems are written into smart contracts and you'd have to vote on changing the fees and that kind of thing. So our users are really excited about control over the network through voting. There's other features, like we're building a feature called bid staking where you can stake some of your tokens along with a bid on a project. And what that does is it you know, if you win the project, those tokens go into escrow. And if you're a bad actor or a no-show, you could potentially lose those tokens. And what it does is it signals to the client that you're a serious bidder, and you know, it discourages things like just drop the price, right? We don't want to race to the bottom on bidding, right? That's not, you know, that doesn't mean quality. Low price does not correlate with high quality in our world. So we want to prevent things that, like you see happening on Upwork, where it's just low bidder wins. We want people to, you know, be able to use their reputation and stake some tokens. So there's a bunch of other things too. We're building an academy. And so there's a pretty rich token ecosystem that, you know, give people good incentives to earn, retain, and use our tokens on the platform. I should say the one important thing that the token is not is it's not a dividend system or a profit return mechanism. The Braintrust is a nonprofit. It does not accumulate assets on its balance sheet. It does not, you know, pay out dividends or profit share or anything like that. We're squarely outside of that realm. The network exists purely to bring these parties together and allow our talent to really build their businesses and you know, be a happier and more prosperous freelancer.
I see. So while there's not maybe some economic long-term incentive with the tokens specifically, you do get these additional features, which can help you sort of solidify your income and have stability moving forward. And what I really like that is really interesting about this conversation is that because you change the model and the incentives, I think the other thing I was kind of thinking is that this really changes the relationships to be much more long-term. So my sense, as you've been describing this, is that all of the things that have been put in place, almost in, you know, from a governance standpoint and because of how you set it up, now the freelancers have a longer term relationship with your company. The businesses who work with Braintrust, I'm assuming they're going to have a longer term relationship with the company. Like you said, the projects themselves are longer. And I think that's really fascinating because it also probably points to that quality. And my assumption would be, you said that some of the freelancers could refer other people to the network. I'm assuming they're almost semi protective over the network. So I just think it's really fascinating the way this governance, if you want to call it that, I guess, or this structure has realigned incentives to be long-term.
Absolutely. That is what we call it for sure. That's the right word. And that's what it's all about, right? You hit it on the head, David. It's aligning incentives for long-term growth. It's all about, like, cause it's, you know, this is a huge win for clients as well, right? Cause think about the Braintrust experience from a client's perspective compared to an agency experience, right? So, you know, Porsche will hire an agency and say, okay, we want to build some software for the car. And, you know, here's an idea of what we want. And the agency comes back and says, okay, it'll be, you know, $4 million and we'll see in 9 months. We're like, well, shit, you know, we don't know who's doing the work and like, what's $4 million really getting us? And who are the, you know, like, what if we would change our mind? And, you know, it's the opposite of an agile process. And the agencies do that to maximize their cut, their profit, right? And then they ship the thing off to Ukraine or India or whatever. And they, you know, try to get the work done as cheap as possible and not good outcomes. So we are the opposite of that. You know, Porsche will contract directly with really highly vetted talent that, you know, have expressed interest in the project. And you can see their past work histories and the results of our coding tests and that kind of thing. And Porsche can, it's all agile. So Porsche can change scope every month or so. And, you know, as long as the talent on there still meets the requirements, they can continue working on it. And and talent gets to own their reputation and their work history. I mean, did you know on Upwork, the mere record that you did a job for a certain amount is Upwork's intellectual property. That does not belong to you, the talent. So you're technically breaking their terms of service if you take that data. With us, like, it's all yours, right? We are a public utility with Brain Trust, and whatever happens on there that you do is your property, and it's a portable reputation and work history. You take it with you. You know, we already have lots of people using their Brain Trust profile as sort of their public resume or whatever. And yeah, it's all about keeping incentives aligned.
Yeah. I'm curious to hear some about how the work kind of comes together and happens. I help organize this Slack group for about like 400 brand builders and operators. And there's always kind of work being, you know, passed around in there. And I see, you know, whatever jobs coming up and stuff like that. And I've always been thinking the tough part seems to be the coordination. And I guess as we're, you know, now everyone's really in this kind of remote world, I'm curious about like the coordination aspects, especially on these bigger projects. So, you know, the agency model, while the downside is you're going to pay maybe a higher margin, you also don't have a deep pool of talent because it's kind of a fixed set of talent. At the same time, they have a working relationship wherein there's, you know, trust built and there's systems built. So I guess one thing I'm curious about is how does work actually come together through the platform, or is that anything that you all provide? And is it really just on the freelancers to be high quality enough that they can handle that coordination?
Yeah, it's actually both. So you're totally right. The hardest part of this stuff is kind of the project management aspect, right? Like setting expectations, staffing it right, setting the sprints, wash, rinse, repeat. And so there's two ways we do this. We have on the platform, we have five talent types. We have engineers, designers, product managers, project managers. So these are certified PMPs, and then sort of DevOps backend, right? So that could be security people or AWS people, whatever. So those are the five types of people you need to build literally any kind of software end to end. So we have lots of great project managers who will come in and maybe tag in on a project and as a freelancer, handle all the coordination, kind of own it. We have a very small ops team here at Freelance on our at Brain Trust at our core team. We only have 10 people on our core team, but a couple of them are ops people that make sure these jobs that are complex get the project management they need, right? Otherwise, you and I both know that's not going to work out long term. The other version is that we do have small dev shops, so small agencies. Think like a group of four or five folks that, you know, work really well together and like love working together and, you know, have a history of taking on large jobs. So you can actually set up your own little agency on Brain Trust. Every member of the agency has to have their own approved and vetted account. So we focus on transparency here. It's fine if you're an agency, but we need to see the four or five people who are going to do the work, which obviously like is no problem for most of these folks. So you're not going to see like Edelman or someone huge come on and, you know, create 300 accounts. It's usually these four or five person shops. And so then they've got, you know, that kind of that coordination piece built into their team. And so they can bid on a project as a group. And so that's also very common.
Yeah. I'm curious. That's really interesting because I think that's natural to how people like to work. So I think it makes sense to kind of integrate that model. You find people you trust, you want to work with them, but it doesn't need to be huge, just a few people, like you were saying, maybe, although I'm sure it could scale much, much bigger. So I guess another thing I'm curious about in this kind of process aspect is you've said that people are bidding on projects, and I'm kind of trying to imagine the future here a little bit for a freelancer. You know, I'm wondering, is it the case that some of that matching will be done more automatically? Or do you think there's always going to be kind of the sales bidding process? Like I kind of picture the future where, you know, this, and maybe other people talk about this some too, where you kind of wake up and you've got a few things in your inbox that are like, you know, requests for work or whatever, and you kind of choose what you want to take on. I guess what I'm wondering is this sort of sales process for the freelancer, do you still feel like you're pitching work? It sounds like right now, and probably part of the phase you're in is that you're doing a lot of the effort to bring the work to the network. But I'm curious about currently and also long-term, how much the freelancers will be involved in, like, let's say the selling, quote unquote, of, you know, their potential work to these clients.
For sure. This is a great point, and it's something that I think we've been really innovative on, because look, as a freelancer myself years ago, like the worst part of being a freelancer is having to go sell, pitch yourself, continuously answer RFPs, all this stuff. I mean, it's like a second job, except it doesn't really pay that well unless you win. And it's annoying, right? If you're a great engineer, a great designer, creative, like it's just not the fun part of the job. So a big value add that BrainTrust brings on is we actually have a small sales team, three or four people on the inside sales team, and then about a dozen or so kind of outside salespeople, people that just purely work on commission, that actually bring these big client opportunities onto the platform. And then our little ops team gets us through procurement. So, you know, as a freelancer, it's actually not easy. I mean, it's almost impossible to do work for a company like Porsche or Nike, because they have these giant procurement departments that, you know, are very hard to get through. You need liability insurance, you need all this stuff. And so we do that for you. And then we bring, you know, the product owners, the people who need this work done, we get them all the way to the front door. We help them post the jobs. And then our platform matches the skills required for these jobs with the talent we have and where the people we've vetted those skills for. So we have verified skill sets. And so you'll only get notified, and you'll only be allowed to submit proposals on jobs that require skill sets you have. And so we are moving it from like just bid on as many things as you can, like Upwork, which look, it's a bad experience for both talent and clients, right? Clients don't want to get 35 bids. So we're using matching, curation, et cetera, to make it, you know, as sort of highly curated as possible. So if you're a Python Django developer, let's say, and you also have some great, you know, React experience, you know, we verified you on those skills, you're only going to get pushed jobs that need those skills that are already on the platform and ready to transact. Like, we do a lot of qualification up front. By the time a job hits BrainTrust, like, they're serious, they're ready to go. There's a high chance that they're going to, you know, enter into contract and make hires with folks. So we have very high signal to noise ratio there, going both ways. So all the talent has to do at that point, because they've already taken the time to build out a really nice profile and verify their skills and go through our tests. All they have to do that at that point is say, like, okay, yeah, I'm going to submit a proposal, and here's my hourly rate, or here's my project rate. And maybe write a couple paragraphs of a cover letter, like, hey, here's why I'm great for this, and here's my experience, whatever. So it's actually, you know, pretty minimal effort, pretty high signal noise ratio. And one of the cool stats we just uncovered here this past month is every single enterprise client we've had post a job on BrainTrust has posted another one. So we have 100% repeat rate. Pretty on amazing. The client side. And that, I mean, it's just a testament to how great the talent is, right? And how kind of effective the matching engine is.
So let's say that the future kind of progresses in this direction, and essentially freelancers are having to sell less. Like, they're not having to focus on both being a marketer and salesperson and developing their craft. I'm curious what you think for a freelancer today who's trying to sort of, I guess, you know, grow into this new way of working, or I guess thrive in the future that's coming, you know, what are the key things that you think they need to do? I mean, I think it makes me think that sometimes maybe an agency that had a great sales department won work over someone who was maybe super talented. So, like, what are the things that somebody needs to be thinking about differentiating themselves on, or, you know, skills that they're building? Is it about going hyper niche? You know, I kind of heard you're saying, you know, for these projects, they have a very specific need. But I imagine, maybe with some of the product managers or something, you may maybe need more of that generalist skill set. Like, what does a freelancer do to prepare and succeed, I guess, in this future that's coming?
Sure. Well, so there's kind of two important points there. One would be a more generic, like what do you need to do to succeed as a full-time freelancer in the tech category? which is a broad sort of non-brain trust specific question. The second one would be brain trust specific, like how do I succeed on brain trust? The latter question is simple. It's, you know, get invited to the platform, build your profile out as extensively as you can. Do any of the kind of skill tests and that kind of thing that are available. We're still rolling that out. So it's a little bit thin right now, but, you know, get on our Slack group, you know, talk to the talent matchers. And you know, if you've got skills that are in demand, you're going to get placed very quickly. The more broad question, you know, what kinds of skills are in demand? I mean, all of them, right? I mean, if you are a modern developer, you'll never go hungry. If you're a product manager, if you're a good UX designer, if you're a certified project manager who has enterprise experience, if you're a DevOps person, if you know anything about enterprise AWS or Google Cloud, you're doing great. You're going to keep honing those skills, keep racking up years of experience. And the last thing I'll say about that is, you know, where the money is in freelancing is enterprise, right? So enterprise experience matters. This is so rather than like customizing WordPress sites for, you know, dental offices on Upwork, you want to be committing code on an enterprise project. And so figure out how to get that done. And that changes the game for you. It changes your hourly rates and it puts you in a different echelon.
Yeah, it makes total sense. I love kind of hearing the description about, you know, referring people in or getting into the Brain Trust Network, because it really does create this incentive. I just get this feeling of like, you want to be in this network, you want to protect the network, you want to refer people. So I just find it really fascinating how, you know, the structure you've built, I think, creates that dynamic where, again, I imagine people are fairly protective over it. They take it seriously. And I think that's a great thing, because it means people are going to be very professional. And once again, this long-term kind of relationship incentive, I think, promotes everyone being good actors. And I imagine, you know, I guess, yeah, the threat of not being, you know, able to be on this platform anymore is kind of strong. And then also you want to make it better. So I think that's just really interesting. Another thing I've just noticed about your company that I find really fascinating, and I'm blanking on the name you use for this, but you've been doing some kind of public, kind of like all hands, essentially. I think that's what it is, on YouTube. Yeah. For your network. And what I'd love to kind of chat on for just a few more minutes here is almost like the internal version of Brain Trust. Like how are you, you said there's 10 people who work there internally on ops, at least. You know, I imagine this network is almost the perfect thing to sort of dog food, in the sense that you probably need different people with different skill sets to kind of fill in. How do you imagine the firm sort of moving forward from here? You know, do you think it will really grow, or is it about keeping super small and just essentially contracting out everything via the network?
Yeah, man, I'm glad you brought this up. This is one of my most fun aspects of this business or this network. So we do have this little tiny company called Freelance Labs that you know has been building the Brain Trust platform and growing the community. We have, yeah, like I said, around 10 or so full-time. None of them are designers or engineers. We have every single pixel or line of code associated with the Brain Trust network has been built as a job by a freelancer on Brain Trust. So that's about as dog food as you can get.
Yeah, amazing.
We have no marketing team. We have no engineering team, no design team. Those 10 people are sales and ops. You know, like in ops includes like, you know, vetting and recruiting talent, that kind of thing. We will eventually move all of those roles to completely freelance on the community. And so the goal for the firm is to basically disappear. I mean, we'll never actually fully go away, probably, because we're a for-profit dev shop like anybody else. And we'll do other jobs for other clients on Brain Trust as well. But our first job has been to build the Brain Trust network and push it out to the community and open source it. And so that's our primary focus. So, you know, most venture back companies you hear about, you know, their goal is to keep growing headcount and keep growing and, you know, get as big as possible in this sort of bureaucratic hierarchical structure. We're the opposite of that. Our goal is to build a network, not a hierarchy, and push that out so the community can own it, control it, change it, modify it, grow it the way we all see fit. We'll always be members of the community, but after we publicly launch sometime next year, we will no longer be in control.
I think that constraint is going to lead to some really creative insights as well. And I think that'll be fascinating just knowing that that is the model you're pursuing. You know, I'm sure there'll be certain points in time where decisions need to get made or you need to figure out how to solve something that the traditional organization of a firm would have been solving for. And you have to figure out how are we going to do that without this structure. So I think I love the commitment to that because I think it's just going to lead to something really interesting. And, you know, it sounds like for you, even personally, this is a broader view on the way that marketplaces are changing. And so part of this, you know, initial, you know, push is figuring out what those boundaries are and what the edges look like.
100%. Yeah. This is, you know, this is what we've been calling the user-owned economy, and we're doing it first in talent. I think it's going to happen to all two-sided marketplaces. I think the ride-sharing network of the future is not going to be some big bloated Silicon Valley waste machine that, you know, pays a bunch of people in San Francisco hundreds of thousands of dollars a year for God knows what the hell they're all doing. It's going to be software that matches supply to demand, that adjusts the prices accordingly based on supply and demand, and that puts the users who make their living on that network in full control of the network.
Yeah, and if you can remove the advertising cost and marketing cost through that incentive network, I mean, that also really probably helps the margins out. Really fascinating. Thank you so much for the time. I want to end just with one question here, which is, we've been touching on it a little bit, but I'm just curious, like, yeah, where are things going? You know, that was part of that pitch, is that everything is going to become kind of a network like this. But yeah, I'm just curious what you think work looks like. You know, paint that picture, I guess, either company building or work, and what that looks like in 5-10 years. You know, what's that version of the future that's coming?
Absolutely. So I'll make two remarks here. So, you know, Mark Andreessen famously said software's eating the world. Well, blockchain is eating the middleman. The whole point of blockchain technology is to take overly extractionary middlemen, whether that's agencies or recruiters or DoorDash or whatever you want, and replace those extractionary middlemen with software, and then give that value that was being taken by the middlemen before and give it back to both sides, right? So, and by lowering those fees, you're expanding into new markets, right? You're enabling new transactions to occur that couldn't have before. Part two is, I think this is going to, we're going to see a serious trend in the next 5 years where knowledge workers who typically have been warehoused in corporate environments, so people who work for big consulting firms or accounting firms or you name it, law firms, auditing firms, these folks will break out of the W-2 world where they're, you know, very much underutilized and likely not very happy. And they'll be able to become freelancers, you know, solopreneurs, and they will work when they want, where they want, at market rates without paying fees, and be able to specialize in what they're actually good at or what they actually enjoy. We're already seeing this in the software development world. It's going to happen to all of the other white collar knowledge worker worlds as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your insight. Where can people start to follow along with BrainTrust? And what's the first step for somebody who's a freelancer who might be interested in joining the network?
Sure. So join the waitlist. Our website is usebraintrust.com. And our Twitter handle, usebraintrust. And I'm at AdamJacksonSF on Twitter.
Amazing. Thank you so much for the time. It's really fascinating. And I love that you guys haven't even launched yet. So excited to see that public launch. You said maybe it's about a year out.
Yeah, we're operating a big network right now. We're on a $5 million run rate right now. So it's very much real people doing real jobs, but it is still invite only. So yeah, public launch will happen next year, but please do get on the waiting list and fill out your profile. And, you know, we'd love to see you.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me, David. It was a pleasure.
That is it for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. And as always, if I can be of any help, feel free to reach out. My email is David, D-A-V-I-D, at deathtostock.com, deathtostock.com. You can also find my personal site at davidsherry.me. Would love to chat with you. If you found this valuable, please review, subscribe. That means a ton to me, and it just gives me the good vibe to keep going. So I'd really appreciate that as well. And that's it. We'll be back again soon.